Where'd Cash go?
That's where Cash went.
Uh-huh.
Yep. No, he just did that.
Yeah.
He came in when I was going out.
Mm-hmm.
That's way more information than I need for my first pod show. Back.
Well, wow. Banner without Cash.
I know.
What?
That hasn't happened in forever.
No, it used to. Well, it used to happen when Jeff and I were setting up.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the first episodes, things like Jeff caught me, things like the high train variety and talking about the 420 Express.
Oh.
And then asking you to turn off the air. I quit! I just listened to that one a couple nights ago.
Oh.
Well, you want to count it down? Do we have enough witty banter without me?
I think so.
Count her down.
Okay. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Hi, this is Greg Hopkins from Phoenix, Arizona, and I am happy to report that I was one of the few that discovered Right Side Up Jenny Payne. And you are listening to Stamp Show here today.
It's a send up. Stamp collecting happens when we dream together.
Welcome to Stamp Show Here Today, episode number 67. I'm sitting here with Scott, Cash, Jeff, Tom, and I'm your host, Dawn.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, hey, Tom.
Hi, Tom. Welcome back.
Haven't seen you since, like, episode 12.
Well, you know, you chased me out for a while.
Well, hopefully Tom will be back as a permanent fixture.
You know, like the chandelier or a desk.
Or a picture on a wall.
Yep.
Hey, I'm
here. Or like a Viking chicken G. Clay. Lord, we haven't brought that up in a long time.
Boy, we haven't used the word G. Clay in probably 6 months. Yeah.
Since episode 12.
Yeah. Episode 12, yes. You can find us on Facebook at Stamp Show Here Today and on Twitter at Stamp Show HT. Or you can call us and leave a message at country code 1-949-873-4298. Tell your friends they can find us on iTunes, Podbay, Stitcher, and many more. Let's talk about stamps. This week we'll be talking about stamp news. USPS prices are going down in April. Hashtag stamp stories, hashtag Arapex. Cash's corrections. And our expert topic this week is on international reply coupons and Ponzi schemes. So, stamp news. USPS prices are going down in April. This April, expect your forever stamps to be worth less. The United States Postal Service announced that on February 25th, we will see a rare drop in postal prices that will become effective Sunday, April 10th. The decrease, which results from the expiration of a temporary rate increase ordered in late 2013, had been widely anticipated. It will be only the third time that there has been a general reduction in postage rates, according to the Alliance of Nonprofit Mailers.
Hold on. Yes. That's not correct.
What?
It went to 5 cents in 1847. It went to 3 cents in 1851. It went to 2 cents in 1898. Then it went back up to 3 cents. Then it went back down to 2 cents after World War One. Then this will be the fifth one.
Fourth.
No, the first one, 1847.
1851.
No, you have to count 1847 because we had postal rates before that.
Sure. 1847, 1851.
Uh-huh. The 2 cent or 1898.
1847, 1851, 1898, 19.
Then it went up 19, to 3 cents.
1919, it went back down.
Then it went,
yeah. And then... Yeah, it'll be the fifth one.
It's the fifth one.
If you count the first.
And that's if we didn't miss one somewhere, which I doubt we did.
I don't think we did.
Yeah. Okay, just.
Somebody grab their Scott catalog and look at the history of postage rates in the front and see if we missed one. Let us know. And we'll add it to Cash's corrections.
Because we're not going to look it up.
Or send a dirty letter to the Alliance of Nonprofit Mailers.
Because they don't know what's
going
on.
Yeah, that was their fact.
Yeah,
that
was their fact, not ours. I would have put a Cash's correction. We need a A&M correction now. Oh, well, sorry.
And they don't even go by the first class letter rates. They go by special rates that they get.
Yeah.
I think if you read the next paragraph, it actually explains the other two.
Mm-hmm.
The two that they are talking about.
Well, yeah. Okay, go ahead. If you ignore others, yeah. I mean, we could ignore those two and say this is the only time it's ever gone down.
Yeah, then you might get some complaints.
I'm sorry, Don. Go ahead.
We're going to have just an episode of nothing but corrections, aren't we?
That's what I get for coming back.
Welcome back. The two other rate reductions came on July 1st, 1885, when a 2 cent reduction in the price of a letter was ordered, and on July 1st, 1919, when World War I 1 cent
exigent.
Thank you. Exigent surcharge was removed according to the alliance. The July 1st, 1885 drop resulted from the letter rate moving from 2 cent per 1/2 ounce to 2 cent per ounce.
Oh, we didn't even count that one. That would be number 6.
Yeah.
There's some weird history going on here. I don't get it.
Whoever wrote this is not a stamp collector.
Or a historian.
At least not a very good one.
Postmaster General Megan J. Brennan has pleaded with Congress and the courts to continue a 4.3% emergency rate increase that had been ordered because of sharply falling mail volume and the 2008 recession. But neither the courts nor lawmakers seem sympathetic to intervening in the change, which Brennan said will cost the cash-hungry Postal Service $2 billion a year.
Well, what was the profit that they posted this last year? $6 billion?
Well, yeah, that was before other expenses. Like, what's really killing them is their union costs.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, when you work for 20 years and you end up with your pension paying you more per month than you were when you were working, of course it's going to kill you.
Well, no, they signed these contracts in like 1990 and said, we are going to anticipate a 3% increase in mail volume every year. From now until eternity. And all of a sudden, you know, that's going to change.
And then the internet.
And so now you have a drop in mail where they're anticipating an increase and saying, no, you have to have people to do twice as much mail as you are doing because, you know, we signed this contract. And it just, you know, you read about it. Linz writes about it all the time. Almost all the losses are things that they could get rid of if they could break these contracts, and they can't.
Somebody didn't negotiate their contract very well. Mm. Or someone else did it too well.
Yeah, it's probably more than you have a bunch. Mm-hmm. You have a bunch of bureaucrats saying, oh, I really don't care. When do I go to lunch? And then you have the union guy saying, how much money can we get? So you have
Wait a minute. How many lawyers are there in Congress?
Right.
And how do we change laws?
Well, who was it that said...
don't you dare excuse bureaucrats. Wrong with you.
There was somebody, and they were talking about dealing with Congress, and they said, my attorney makes $1 million a year. This guy makes $200,000 a year. I can hire 5 guys to take him out, and quite frankly, it's a lot of times easier just to hire the bureaucrat.
Hmm.
So, you know, this is the system we're in. Happy trails.
Yay. Right into the poorhouse.
Well, I mean, Lloyd always says a great saying. It's, if something can't go on forever, it won't.
How existential.
Yeah.
That's an anti-Lloyd?
Brennan had agreed January 12th to give mailers at least 45 days advance notice of the change. In early February, the USPS gave notice of what the new rates would be. As expected, the first-class letter rate will drop to 47 cents from 49 cents. The additional ounces of first-class letters will drop to 21 cents from 22 cents. International letters will drop to $1.15 from the current $1.20. Postcards will fall from 35 cents to 34 cents. Prices for forever stamps will also decline on April 10th. In a press release confirming the change date, Brennan again argued that the reduction is not wise. The temporary increase surcharge granted to the Postal Service last year only partially alleviated our extreme multi-year revenue declines resulting from the Great Recession, which exceeded $7 billion in 2009 alone, she stated. The Postal Service's current price regime is unworkable and should be replaced, Brennan said, citing continuing declines in first-class mail, which has traditionally supported the Postal Service's operating costs.
Well, I'm big supporter.
Yeah.
All that crap I sell on eBay.
Right?
I mail it all out first class. So does cash.
Yeah, this came up like 3 months ago. And at that time, I just said, there is no way. Once a price goes up, it stays up.
Cash's correction. Cash's correction.
Longest term cash's correction in Stamp Show Here Today history.
Time for hashtag stamp stories, hashtag Aeropex. So you guys went to Aeropex. How was it?
My arms are tired.
Yeah, well, it's because you flew back.
Yeah, well.
Hold on. Say that again.
My arms are tired.
Thank you, Don.
There were no crickets involved.
No, that was a fun show. I know a lot of dealers, I know some dealers did really good, some dealers did really bad, some dealers did in between. I know one person who said, I'm not doing this show again. And then I spoke with another dealer who said it's the greatest show he's ever done. So, it really was all over the place.
But, Sounds to me like any show you go to.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I mean, sometimes you get a majority of dealers saying they did well or didn't do well, but there's always somebody that didn't do well, and there's always somebody that had a great show. Yeah. So, I mean, you have to kind of take each individual thing with a report with a grain of salt, and you have to look at the overall. How did everybody do?
I think overall people did normal for a stamp show.
They did average.
Yeah, I think overall it was average.
Friday was super busy. They had a lot of traffic. They had more traffic than they had the previous year. But Saturday and Sunday were just so dead.
Really?
Everybody came on Friday.
It's odd because I remember not that long ago, a couple, maybe 5 years ago, Friday would be the time when people would like use it as an excuse to get off work. Mm-hmm. And you'd get some people and you'd get a nice turnout. Well, but Saturday was the day that everybody showed up, not Friday.
Because it was the first weekend day.
Yeah. Well,
usually Friday.
And then Sunday's always slow.
Is the retirees' day. That's the day that those who don't have to go to work and have plenty of money show up. It's usually the dealer's best sales day money-wise.
Yeah.
But then Saturday is generally busier numbers-wise, but the sales are smaller because that's the working guy's day to come in.
Yeah. And then Sunday has always...
Sunday has traditionally been...
There are a lot of shows slow. Who don't even do Sundays.
I was just going to ask, why do they even do Sundays?
I like going on a Sunday because...
I like it because it is quiet, honestly, but...
Well, that's one thing because I don't like large crowds and loud noises, but...
Crying babies.
I like to go on Sunday because then I'm looking for the dealers who have to travel back home and truck all their stuff.
Yep.
Well, what don't you want to take home? Maybe I can take it home. Let's make a deal.
Yeah, show closes at 4. I sit down at 3 and go, all right, what do you not want to take home?
Yep, you want to
see that.
You want to be there when it opens on Friday to find all the good deals, and then you want to be there on Sunday just before closing to get all the... Oh, man, I really don't want to pack this up.
The bulk deals. Find the better deals.
Yeah.
Yeah. You get bulk deals on Sunday, and you get fines on Friday.
And Aeropex was great because the exhibits are right there next to all the dealers. And they had some really good exhibits this time.
Yes.
I mean, they always do, but this time they had some really impressive. Did you see the Inverted Jenny exhibit?
Yes. Actually, I talked to the guy that exhibited.
Yeah. Well, we had him on our show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. He had his exhibit up?
Yeah.
He
put his exhibit up.
Did you go to Aeropex? Why don't you share your stories with us at hashtag stamp stories, hashtag Aeropex.
Oh, and the weather was great, too.
And now for Cash's corrections. Cash.
Hail, fellows. Well met. A correction from last week.
I demand crickets.
For what? I haven't said anything yet.
I demand you edit that out.
Since Tom doesn't know, he added that probably about 10 episodes ago and we roll our eyes every time.
So first time I've heard it and I rolled my eyes.
Cash. Awesome.
Get a new catchphrase.
Okay, I'll find a new catchphrase next podcast.
We'll work on that.
So last episode, totally off the subject of stamps, we were talking about could Bill Clinton be the vice president? And the end of the 12th Amendment does indeed say that a person who is not eligible to be president cannot be a vice president. However, that only applies to your age, your nation of origin. After the 14th Amendment, whether or not you fought for the Southern cause, it was not changed in the 22nd Amendment. So Bill Clinton could indeed probably, and of course it would go to some judge somewhere, but he could be a vice president. So we could have a Billary.
Billary 2016.
Billary 2016. The second thing, going back a ways, I just thought this was an interesting fact about Pluto. But what the heck was that?
Part one was Dawn stabbing herself in the neck with a pen.
I was stuck on Billary.
Billary.
Scott threw up a little bit in his mouth.
Uh-huh. And Jeff snorted.
So an interesting fact about Pluto, anyway, back when we were discussing Pluto. Pluto and its moon rotate at the same... We were talking about how long is a day.
It's called a period.
Yeah. Pluto and Pluto's moon both rotate at the same angle so that the face of Pluto that faces the moon is always the face that faces the moon. It doesn't go around the planet. And I thought that was very interesting. You have these two balls concentrically rotating through space. The next thing was, it was very funny because we were talking about the non-winning lottery tickets.
Mm-hmm.
That day, here at PSE, we got another 596 submitted.
It was a 596.
It was a 596 submitted.
That's funny. Well, they hoped it was a 596. Yeah,
it's not. And it's on a postcard and it's the wrong color. It's, you know, it's clearly a person who, if they had waited a week and listened,
right,
they would have been there.
Save themselves some work and money and a little embarrassment. And
Yep. I also saw the new Star Wars stamps.
Ooh.
And
except those look like Star Trek.
I'm sorry. The new Star Trek stamps. Thank you for your correction. And
I'll save you one for next week.
Yeah. It's a 4-stamp block. And quite frankly, two of them I think are grade C, maybe B. And the other two are just horrible. This is I think this is a really not great artwork issue. And it's a shame.
I mean, they had such a great chance to make it really good. And I saw those a month ago and I thought, that's not going to be a great issue. I'm not collecting that one.
Yeah.
Mm-mm. I like the Star Trek insignia and I like the Enterprise. But yeah, those are like B grade. They're not even A. I like the Millennium Series Star Trek stamp way better than I like that one. Mm-hmm. Any of those.
And the last thing is I want to wish everybody a happy Lupercalia. We're a little late, but you still have your chance to go out, get drunk, take off all your clothes, sacrifice a goat, and throw dead goat parts at each other for good luck in the upcoming year. So everybody it is one of the longest celebrated holidays.
Pagan.
Well, they cut apart a goat. Of course, it's pagan. Although.
I just want to see the YouTube video of these celebrations.
Oh, yeah, right?
It's the celebration of the founding of Rome, and they cut apart goats and hit each other with goat parts for good luck and to spur fertility.
So is that what the T-Rex was doing with the goat in Jurassic Park?
I think, that's it.
Because he did throw parts.
He was celebrating Lupinalia. Okay.
The more you know.
I will find that sound clip.
Yeah,
please do.
The more you know. Anyway, that's it.
And now our expert topic, IRCs and Ponzi schemes. Scott, so what the heck is an IRC?
Well, since you asked, since you put it that way, be nice. IRC is an international reply coupon. They're purchased from a post office, and you enclose them with a letter to prepay a response. It's like sending a self-addressed stamped envelope, but the coupon is for a stamp from a foreign country. And it's to pay, they can exchange it for postage for a single rate letter. So basically it would be a 1 ounce first class reply letter. Since if you're sending, say, a letter to Europe, and pick a country, obviously our stamps are not valid for postage when they're mailed in those countries. So you get a coupon, you pay basically the first class rate, which for us today is 49 cents. And then there's a small surcharge. I don't know exactly what it is because I haven't done it, but it might be 2 cents or 5 cents or something like that the post office charges. And they issue this little coupon that you enclose in your letter. Then when your recipient goes to respond, they take that to the post office and exchange it for a first-class letter coming back. So in our instance, if you're sending a letter to Europe, it would be $1.20, soon to be $1.15.
Right.
Well, they would, in exchange, you would pay $1.20 for the coupon plus the surcharge. And then they would exchange that for whatever the postage coming back to the United States for them is. And if you wanted to upgrade it to like an airmail rate or something like that, you just buy a higher denominated coupon.
So you send something to me in Italy, I can go up to a postal counter with this coupon in Italy and exchange it for a stamp there.
Right. Put the stamp on your
and
letter.
And then put the Italian stamp on to send it back to you.
Correct.
Okay.
That's what they're for. And back in 1874, when they first had the Universal Postal Union, this idea was discussed, but it didn't really come to fruition until the early 1900s. When it was established between member UPU nations, and now it applies to, I think it's still all nations in the UPU.
No, I think they discontinued it not that long ago, but I think it's been discontinued.
Well, they talked about it, but I don't know if they did.
Oh, okay. Maybe I was reading some that they were thinking about discontinuing it or something.
Yeah.
I was going to ask if that's still going on today. How does that work? I would think it'd be getting very close to being obsolete with the way the internet works.
Yeah, well, that too. Well, yeah, you know, going back in history again, you know, in 1840, the prices all dropped. And so everybody said, hey, how can we make money? And in the 1880s, all the businesses started stepping in.
Well, even in the 1840s, they were talking about, well, we need an international postage stamp.
Well,
basically, that would be good wherever you bought it to anywhere in the world. And so that idea kind of floated around for 30 years before it was kind of a little bit more solidified at the UPU Congress in Bern. And then through more discussions and more trials and things like that, and they finally got it through.
Well, I have a slightly different take on it, and nobody knows really what the guys were thinking when they were sitting around their desk. But I think that based on the history of it, it really happened in the early 1900s because sail ships stopped and steamers started. All of a sudden people, and again, I go from a business standpoint, how can we make money, you know, with the mails?
Well, there was much more international commerce as you moved from the 18th to from the 19th to the 20th century.
Because of the speed of the
so all of a sudden, transportation.
Yeah, so people were sitting around saying, okay, I made a bunch of money in the United States. How can I make money in Germany? And they said, well, it's really easy. I do the same thing. I send an order form to some dude in Germany. He sends it back. I put it on a steamship, and now he has it in a week or two or three.
What were you telling me? You quoted some sort of time, like year and a half.
Oh, yeah. That's one of my favorite stories is a guy in Cleveland, Ohio. He wants a new cell phone. He goes on eBay and he buys one from China. It shows up in a box in his mailbox like a week later. And the guy wonders why it took a week to get from China to his house in Cleveland, Ohio.
That took forever.
That took forever. In the early 1800s, to get something, for, if you ordered a cell phone, it would take a year and a half.
For transcontinental shipping?
To get from China to Cleveland, Ohio. And then once you got the cell phone, it would be useless because there's no reception in the 1850s.
And the thing would be the size of a barn.
Yeah, if you regress backwards, how the size has changed,
So they were getting stuff much, much quicker. And again, you know, we're talking about like a week from China. They were thinking, oh, this is so fantastic. I can get something from in a month from Italy. Wow, that's impressive.
That used to take a year.
And so they're saying, I need to do business. I can't mail these guys self-addressed stamped envelopes.
Mm-hmm.
But I can mail them an addressed envelope and give them a little coupon so they can buy a stamp and stick it on. And so they saw it as a way, just like they had done in the 1880s here, to expand their business overseas. And of course, people overseas are doing the same thing with America, saying, hey, I can sell my Dresden pottery in Manhattan. You know, all I have to do is be able to get the orders.
Well, it's
okay.
I mean, it's the same kind of concept that we see here domestically, where you have reply postal cards, where you send a two-part, and then you have it has the reply to come back. Well, it's the same thing, except it's international, and it's a letter, not a postal card. And they wanted to be able to, and a lot of times from the early 20th century, you see salesmen actually sending these things out to try just cold to entire areas to make contacts, and they expect to get a certain percentage of those back saying, oh, yes, I'm interested in your product or your catalog or whatever. And so this was a way to do it internationally as well.
Okay, it sounds like it filled a pretty big hole at the time.
It was sort of, you know, the mail, and we all kind of take it for granted, but the mail was the internet 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that we're going through right now with the internet, they went through 100 years ago with postage stamps.
Oh, yeah.
Similar learning curve, similar growth.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. I didn't think about it that way.
And when you went to buy these reply coupons, at first you had to go to large cities because they were only available from the large post offices. The small rural post offices did not have these coupons available. And so, but eventually they became available in all post offices. And but I don't think they were ever available through like the Philatelic Agency.
Well, what I read, and again, this is from a great exhibit that was at Pacific 97, and I read the write-up on it. In the beginning, you had to go to special post offices because it's actually a special form that you have to fill out. And it has to be canceled there, and then they have to do a bunch of bookkeeping. As time went by, you could get it any place, but I don't even think you can get it any place. You just you didn't have to go to these specific post offices, but it still had to be a large enough post office for the people to carry them.
Right.
I mean, the demand on these was not that high.
No, it never has been.
Yeah, they're very rare. And by the way, these are widely collected by stamp collectors.
They are collected. They are actually listed in the Scott catalog in the very back of the
book. They are also heavily collected by coin collectors. These are considered currency.
Right.
So these are cross topics, coin collectors and stamp collectors. And the coin collectors pay more for these than stamp collectors do on average, especially the older stuff.
Well, not only that, trying to find some of these used from small African countries and out-of-the-way European countries can be very difficult. And over the years, the design of the coupons changed. So you have changes in wording, you have changes in background design, you have all of these as well as different values.
Why don't you describe what one looks like real quick? Because the basic design hasn't changed a hell of a lot from the first one to the last one.
I believe they have a picture of Mercury on them, the running figure. Some of them have pictures of like a map, a worldwide map. And they're usually engraved. They have nice... Well, no, they're not usually engraved. I think some of the newer ones are engraved.
I think they were done as cheaply as possible, depending. But
originally, but yeah. I think because they're viewed as a monetary instrument, the production values have gotten a little bit more sophisticated.
Yeah. So it has two white balloons on it, big white blank
right.
spots.
Right, and those are for the issuing post office cancellation and the redemption post office cancellation.
So is this like a single sheet of paper? How big were they?
They're maybe
3 by 2.
4 inches by 3 inches.
4 by 3.
Oh, okay.
Not very big. Easily enclosed in an envelope or a letter.
So they're not meaning to increase the weight by sticking it in
right.
there, really.
They're generally fairly thin paper. They generally have instructions in multiple languages, which
okay.
has changed over the years. So occasionally, different types, they'll have similar backgrounds, but then the wording will change. So that's like type 1, type 2, or type A, type B of some of them.
Pretty much they all say international reply coupon or coupon reply international.
Yeah, it's usually in French
yeah.
and English as far as the title describing what it is.
And what collectors tend to see are the ones that have one cancel on the left side, because if it got canceled on the right side, that means somebody cashed it in and it went through the post office bookkeeping and was ultimately destroyed.
Right, because it was redeemed.
Right.
So the left side would denote that it was purchased but never used?
Yeah, yes. So if you were sending a stamp to Germany from New York, you'd go to the New York post office, they would cancel the left side, it would, and it actually was very specific. You had to have a very readable cancel. It had to be a high quality cancel, and it would say New York, United States, and it would have the date. And then when it got to wherever it was going, they'd cancel the other side, mail it back to New York, and say, "Hey, give me my money."
Okay.
So used ones are actually kind of rare. Also, ones that have no cancellation on them at all are unusual.
Yeah, those...
So those escaped without getting paid for, kind of a thing.
Those tended to be favor escapees or specimens or things like that.
Here, have a stack of these.
Yeah, I have a stack of these, throw them in the trash, and somebody says, I'm not going to put these in the trash, I'll put them in my pocket.
Okay, so we talked about IRCs a whole bunch. What the crap does this have to do with Ponzi? I've heard the term as a growing up, everybody has. What's a Ponzi scheme, and what do IRCs have to do with it?
Well, that's the cool thing about IRCs, is they have a great backstory. Okay, so the Ponzi scheme, the first Ponzi scheme, surprisingly, was done by a guy named Ponzi. And I just have to
Shocking.
Marvel at what are the odds of that. It's like, you know, what were the odds that Lou Gehrig would get Lou Gehrig's disease? But... the Ponzi scheme, what he did, he was an Italian-American, and he looked at these IRCs and said, you know, if you buy a stamp in the United States, or if you buy a coupon in the United States, and you redeem it in Italy, there's like a 2-cent profit you can make off of it. Because we're only paying 2-cent stamps, we're redeeming them for 4-cent stamps. You can make 2 cents off every one of these IRCs you send across. And he promoted this as a totally legal scheme. And people said, yeah, you're right. You know, you do the research. And it's like, yes, I am looking at the paperwork. Yes, the numbers check out. Yes, this is doable. And Ponzi started taking people's money and investing in this. Well, the fact of the matter is that filling out these IRCs is actually a little difficult. I mean, it's not just you go up there, you hand them the money, they hand you the coupon. There's a little more transaction cost.
What?
Yeah, secondly, at the point when he was getting in the most money, they figured that he would have to be sending 10,000 of these IRCs a month. And, of course, no post office is going to redeem 10,000 IRCs. That's going to be like a full-time job for several people, counting these guys all up and sorting them and getting them back to New York and everything. So there was just a transactionally, it wouldn't work in reality.
So it looked good on paper.
So it looked good on paper. But what Ponzi did was basically somebody would say, hey, here's $1,000, go do that. And then he'd take the $1,000 and say, hey, we made a 20% profit. Here's $200 back. Just give them $200 out of their $1,000.
Out of their own money.
And a lot of people would say, wow, I made a 20%. Just keep the $200 and reinvest it. And then he'd get more people and more people and more people. And eventually he took over banks, basically. He had such high deposits that he took over banks.
Whoa.
And these banks then, and again, this is the 1920s, there isn't so much federal regulation, but there is some. And these banks are coming back, or these regulators are coming back and saying, you have some problems in your books here. This doesn't check out. Your income that you're saying you're getting is not actually income that you're putting on the books anywhere, nothing that we can get. And so it was humorous because the whole Ponzi scheme rose and fell over like about 18 months. About 6 months into it, everybody is saying, going through this banking stuff, saying, hey, there's a problem here. And people are still investing with Ponzi. And finally, you know, the whole thing crashed down, the bubble burst. Everybody realized that it was a fraud, that you couldn't process 10,000 IRCs per month and get the revenue that he was saying that he was getting. So they tried him and they threw him in jail. And surprisingly, wow, they only threw him in jail for like 8 years. I mean, this is like
white collar crime.
This is like Bernie Madoff level of stuff, except Bernie Madoff lasted much longer.
What'd they do to him? What did he get?
I don't remember. He got several like 12-year sentences, but when you add them all together, they're like 1,200 years or something.
Oh, good God.
Like that. So Ponzi, which everybody hears the Ponzi schemes, mm-hmm, started with stamp collecting and specifically started with these IRCs. And that's why these IRCs are valuable, because everybody likes the backstory. Whenever Bernie Madoff gets hit or whenever some big hedge fund gets hit or something like that, they all go, ooh, Ponzi schemes. And all of a sudden, everybody rushes out and says, what caused the Ponzi scheme? And it's these, these little pieces of paper being sent to Italy, having them come back, and making 2 cents each off of them.
That's funny. So it's the old colloquialism of robbing Peter to pay Paul?
Oh, no, it's not even. A lot of it is robbing Peter to pay Peter, just at a slower rate.
You just don't tell him you're robbing him?
Yeah, it's just, hey, thanks for the $100, here's 20 bucks back. No, people who want to read on the actual full Ponzi thing, and a while ago they said, oh, Ponzi wasn't that bad of a guy and everything, and it's, you know, he was. He was a flat-out criminal, and he was arrested. He served time several times before he came up with the Ponzi scheme. And so, you know, he was a shyster. He was not a good guy. There are some things going around that say, yeah, but, you know, in the end, he was like donating stuff to charity and stuff like that. It's like, no, this guy was a scumbag.
He was just a nice sort of scumbag.
Yeah.
That's funny.
But he, when he ultimately went to jail, it wasn't for bilking the people. It was for wire fraud.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Because people were paying him over state lines,
okay,
and it was going into a bank. So the feds went in there and said, hey. And there was a little thing, because I think it was Massachusetts. The feds threw him in jail, gave him a really light sentence. He served like 3 years and was out. And then Massachusetts came up and said, not so fast. We're taking you to court. And he goes, not so fast. Double jeopardy. I already was in jail. And they go, no. So he went to jail, or he went to court, and he actually like won. He was such a smooth talker that they let him off.
Huh.
So in the end, like on the third trial, they finally nabbed him and threw him in jail. So That's the brief story of Ponzi. If you want to pull up more stuff on Ponzi, you know, Wikipedia has a little bit about it, but it doesn't do it justice. Pull up like the real Ponzi stories and look at the numbers of what was going on and stuff. This guy, this was a major, major operation, and he deserves credit for being, you know, the shyster that everybody points to, like when they're looking at Social Security and Bernie Madoff and all this stuff. It's pretty cool.
Well, I mean, he was the originator of the Ponzi scheme.
That's it.
Mm-hmm. What are amazing. The odds?
Yeah, what are
you can email us at stampshowheretoday@gmail.com, Twitter stampshowht, Facebook stampshowheretoday, and our website, www.stampshowheretoday.com, with your questions and comments. You can now leave your questions and comments on our Google Voice answering machine anytime, 1-949-873-4298. There is also a link to Google Voice on our website, so you can make the call from your computer. And on that note, keep collecting.
Hi, I'm Ann Riley.
And I'm Rick Zarrett.
And we are listening to Stamp Show Here Today.
This episode of Stamp Show Here Today is brought to you not only by the Philatelic Book of Secrets, but also by the Philatelic Book of Secrets Volume 2. Volume 2 covers even more secrets. It can be bought alone for $10 or together with Part 1 for $15 at gradingmatters.com. Get yours today.
Hi, this is Bobby Prager with Gary Posner Incorporated, based in Long Island, New York, and New Jersey. And I just want to say that the stamp hobby is alive and well here, and we love buying and selling stamps. We pay very, very, very good prices, so we'd rather buy 9 out of 10 collections than just a very small percentage of what we see. Also, check us out on our website at GaryPosnerInc.com. You'll see a lot of great stamps at great prices. And any questions, just feel free to call Bob at 1-800-323-4279. That's Bob Prager at 1-800-323-4279. And my cell number is 917-538-8133. Happy hunting out there.
Return to sender, address unknown, no such number.